Hello everyone, I'm delighted to be with you today to discuss the listing of pre-revenue biotech companies on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. As those of you who follow the markets will know, the biotech industry has undergone significant growth in recent years due to factors such as population growth, global population aging, and technological innovation. The COVID-19 pandemic accelerated the growth of various biotech subsectors, particularly drug companies developing mRNA technology and those producing vaccines and diagnostic products. China has invested heavily in biotech, and the biotech sector is a key element of China's economic strategy. Biotech was designated as a strategic emerging industry in China's 14th five-year plan, covering 2021 to 2025. Between 2016 and 2020, the number of Chinese biotech companies grew, indicative of the priority given to the sector's development. Whereas a few years ago, Chinese companies generally adopted a license-in model, paying license fees to produce internationally developed products in China, increasing numbers of Chinese companies now license their own China-made products offshore, for example, in the US and Europe. And the capital markets are playing a critical role in the growth of Chinese biotech and biotech generally, and in delivering the positive effect that it can actually have. The main problem that early stage biotech companies originally faced in trying to raise funds on the Hong Kong Exchange was that given the amount of capital they have to spend on R&D, they struggle to meet the main board's financial eligibility tests. For this reason, prior to the Hong Kong Stock Exchange's introduction of a listing regime specifically for pre-revenue biotechs in 2018, early stage Chinese biotech companies tended to list on NASDAQ because of its lower entry criteria. Conscious that it was losing these potentially high-growth companies to NASDAQ, the Hong Kong Exchange launched a consultation in February 2018 on listing rule amendments aimed at enabling biotech companies, and particularly Chinese biotech companies, to list in Hong Kong. The essence of the proposals was to allow early-stage biotech companies to list on the main board without meeting its profit or revenue criteria. However, to provide appropriate investor protection, the exchange proposed additional suitability criteria requiring the products of biotech listing applicants to have reached fairly advanced stages of an internationally recognized product approval process. It also proposed a much higher market cap requirement for biotechs. This aimed to limit listed biotech companies to those that had received a considerable amount of investment from pre-IPO investors, which is indicative of their confidence in the company, its management, and future. The consultation process back then concluded quickly, and the new listing regime for biotech companies came into effect in April 2018 under Chapter 18A to the main board listing rules. So since the introduction of the biotech listing regime in 2018, the exchange has become one of the world's largest and Asia's largest funding hub for biotech companies. As at the end of last year, 31st December 2023, approximately 63 biotech companies had listed under Chapter 18A with an aggregate market cap of around US$78.5 billion. Most of these biotech companies are Chinese. Shanghai is the main hub for China's biotech industry, and over half of the Chinese biotech companies listed on the Hong Kong Exchange are headquartered there or in the nearby cities of Hangzhou or Suzhou. 2021 was the best year for Hong Kong biotech listings to date, with 20 listings and a total market cap for all Hong Kong listed biotech companies of US$119 billion at the end of 2021. With a global downturn in biotech fundraising in 2022, the number of biotech listings dropped to 8 in 2022 and 7 in 2023, while the aggregate market cap figures fell to HK$94 billion in 2022 and HK$78.5 billion in 2023. Despite the overall drop, 2023 witnessed the listings of some major Chinese biotech firms, including that of Sichuan Kelun Biotech Biopharmaceutical, which raised HK$1.56 billion in a Chapter 18A listing in Hong Kong's sixth largest IPO of 2023. With a recent upturn in biotech capital raising, there have been two Chapter 18A listings to date in 2024. Chun's Therapy Co. Limited raised around $239 million in March 2024 and Sunho Biologics Inc. listed in May 2024, raising approximately 461 million Hong Kong dollars. Meanwhile, in the US, there have been reports that the IPO market for biotech is showing signs of revival from the 2022 downturn, with 11 biotech IPOs raising 1.7 billion US dollars in the first half of 2024, up 64% year on year. This comes amid reports that more Chinese companies are pursuing IPOs on US exchanges than in Hong Kong, suggesting perhaps an interest in greater international visibility and broader investor access. Several companies that listed under Chapter 18A have since met the financial requirements for a regular listing under Chapter 8 of the listing rules and have graduated to ordinary main board listings. As of December 2023, six biotech companies had progressed from Chapter 18A to Chapter 8 listings, and the time from IPO to meeting the main board's financial criteria ranged from 10 to 26 months. A significant development was the inclusion of Chapter 18A biotech companies in the Hang Seng Composite Index in August 2020, making them eligible for southbound trading under Stock Connect. The shares of Chapter 18A issuers that are included in the Hang Seng Composite Index or have corresponding A shares listed on the Shanghai or Shenzhen stock exchanges are eligible for inclusion in Stock Connect. With the continued development of the Greater Bay Area as an innovation hub with Hong Kong as its capital raising center, the Hong Kong Exchange is well positioned to facilitate access for PRC-based firms to international capital. IPO funds raised by biotech companies increased slightly to $510 million US dollars in 2023, up $470 million US dollars in 2022, while the overall market saw a general decrease. This may indicate that biotech IPOs continue to be popular among investors, even in a challenging market. Chapter 18A of the main board listing rules provides for the listing of biotech companies that cannot meet the financial eligibility tests of Listing Rule 805. A biotech company that's able to satisfy the financial eligibility requirements under Listing Rule 805 can't list under Chapter 18A and must list under the general listing rules. Companies that list under Chapter 18A must still be able to satisfy the eligibility requirements of Chapter 8, other than those under Listing Rules 805, 805A, 805B, and 805C. These set out the financial eligibility requirements for listing, including the track record, management continuity, and ownership continuity and control requirements for listing, and the exceptions to those requirements, as well as a prohibition on listing cash companies. Chapter 18A applicants must also satisfy additional eligibility criteria under Chapter 18A and the Stock Exchange's guidance letters GL9218, GL8516, and GL10720, which are now summarized in Chapter 2.3 of the Exchange's Guide for New Listing Applicants, which came into effect on the 1st of January 2024. There is no listing regime on GEM for pre-revenue biotech companies. The Stock Exchange has set up a biotech advisory panel made up of experienced market participants in the biotech industry to assist in the review of Chapter 18A listing applications. The function of the panel is advisory only, and members are consulted by the Exchange, the Listing Committee, and the SFC on an individual and as-needed basis. In order to be considered eligible and suitable for listing under Chapter 18A, the company must first meet the definition of a biotech company, which is defined in Listing Rule 18A01 as a company primarily engaged in the R&D, application and commercialization of biotech products, processes or technologies, which are collectively referred to as biotech products. Biotech is defined as the application of science and technology to produce commercial products with a medical or other biological application. An applicant must then demonstrate that it meets the suitability criteria set out in Chapter 2.3 of the Exchange's Guide for New Listing Applicants under Eligibility and Suitability for Listing of Biotech Companies, which lists the various features that will amount to suitability. The first criteria is that a listing applicant must have developed at least one core product beyond the concept stage. A core product is a biotech product that forms the basis of the listing application and, under applicable laws and regulations, must be evaluated and approved by a competent authority based on data derived from clinical trials on human subjects before being marketed and sold in the market regulated by that authority. Chapter 18A recognizes three authorities as competent authorities: the US Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, the European Medicines Agency, or EMA, and the China Food and Drug Administration, or CFDA, which is now known as the National Medical Products Administration, although the updated name has not yet been included in the listing rules. The exchange has the discretion to recognize other national or supranational authorities as competent authorities on a case-by-case basis, depending on the nature of the biotech product. A core product is regarded as having been developed beyond the concept stage if it has met the developmental milestones specified for the type of product set out in the Guide for New Listing Applicants, which I'll go through in a moment. The products referred to in the guide are drugs, which include pharmaceuticals, which are small molecule drugs, and biologics; medical devices, which include diagnostic devices and other biotech products, which are biotech products that are not drugs or medical devices; drugs, which include pharmaceuticals and biologicals, must meet clinical trial and regulatory milestone requirements. For new pharmaceutical products and pharmaceutical products that are based on previously approved or biosimilar products, the applicant must have successfully completed a clinical trial categorized as phase one by the FDA or an equivalent process designated by another competent authority. Phase one clinical trials are clinical trials conducted on human subjects. As to the regulatory milestone the product must have reached, the relevant competent authority must have no objection to the applicant commencing phase two or later stage clinical trials. If clinical trials are conducted with a non-competent authority, they may be accepted by the exchange on a case-by-case basis. The factors the exchange will look at are whether the authority in question can be considered comparable to the competent authorities named in Chapter 18A, and has a similar approval process and expertise in assessing the relevant biotech product. It will also consider precedents of other biotech products seeking guidance from the comparable authority. For an in-licensed or acquired core product, the exchange expects the applicant to have independently completed at least one clinical trial regulated by the relevant competent authority on human subjects since the in-licensing or acquisition. If the listing applicant has completed one phase of combined clinical trials, for example, phases 1 and 2, this will be regarded as meeting the clinical trial requirement if the competent authority considers that this phase is standalone and equivalent to completing phase 1. The applicant will be able to satisfy the regulatory milestone requirement by disclosing in its listing document either the competent authority's confirmation or material communications with the competent authority, showing that it has no objection to the listing applicant proceeding to the next phase of clinical trials, and that there are no exceptions to its non-objection. For medical devices, which include diagnostic devices, the product must be categorized under the relevant competent authority's classification criteria as a Class 2 medical device or above, and the applicant must have completed at least one clinical trial for Class 2 or above medical device. The applicant must also demonstrate that the competent authority or its authorized institution has no objection to the applicant proceeding to further clinical trials or commencing sales of the device. As for drugs, the listing applicant can satisfy the regulatory milestone requirement by disclosing in its listing document the competent authority's assurance that it does not object to the applicant starting the next phase of clinical trials and that no carve-outs to that no objection exist. A listing applicant with a medical device that has had its registration application conditionally accepted under the NMPA's Green Path will be accepted as having met the regulatory milestone requirement if the only matters that remain outstanding are procedural and administrative matters, and no impediments to the device's registration are expected. The NMPA's Green Path is a route that offers priority review and accelerated approval for selected medical device companies. To be eligible for the Green Path, the company must prove that the NMPA has not rejected any registration application for the same type or classification of device. A listing applicant will not meet the clinical trial milestone requirement if, before its listing, it becomes aware of a possible and imminent downgrade of the risk classification of the medical device below Class 2 due to proposed or effective regulatory change. Biotech products that fall outside the drug and medical device categories are considered as other biotech products. These are assessed on a case-by-case basis with reference to the relevant facts, including whether the product has been developed beyond the concept stage by reference to the developmental milestones for drugs and medical devices that I just talked about. The exchange will also expect there to be an appropriate framework or objective indicators for investors to make an informed investment decision about the listing applicant. If the exchange decides to accept the application, it will need the SFC's consent under Listing Rule 204. The exchange categorizes biotech products according to their categorization by their competent authority. If a biotech product is regulated as a drug or medical device, a biotech listing applicant cannot reclassify the product as other biotech product because it's unable to meet the requirements for the relevant category. In May 2022, the exchange had to determine whether a biologic product met the core product eligibility requirements for a Chapter 18A listing. The company had carried out Phase 1 clinical trials on the product in Australia and then carried out global pivotal Phase 2 and 3 clinical trials on it in centres including the EU and PRC markets. Before completing the Australian trial, the company requested a rapid scientific advice from the European Medicines Agency and initiated an investigation on new drug application with China's National Medical Products Administration. The company submitted the clinical trial designs for the Australian trial and the global pivotal phase 2 and 3 clinical trials and presented the Australian trial clinical data to the European and Chinese competent authorities. Having reviewed the materials on the Australian trial clinical data and the global pivotal phase 2 and 3 clinical trials protocol, the European and Chinese competent authorities acknowledged and accepted the Australian trial results and confirmed they had no objection to the company progressing to the next phase of clinical trials on the product. Later, both competent authorities approved the company to start the phase 2 and 3 clinical trials. The issue for the exchange to determine was whether the product satisfied the relevant core product eligibility requirements. As I mentioned earlier, according to the Guide for New Listing Applicants, for a new biologic product to meet the requirement of being a core product developed beyond the concept stage, the applicant must show that it has completed Phase 1 clinical trials, which are clinical trials on human subjects categorized as Phase 1 clinical trials by the FDA. Or an equivalent process regulated by another competent authority. In addition, the relevant competent authority must have no objection for the applicant commencing phase 2 or later stage clinical trials. The Australian trial was regulated by Australia's Therapeutic Goods Administration and was therefore not considered a clinical trial regulated by a competent authority under Chapter 18A. However, as I mentioned previously, the exchange can accept biotech product clinical trials if they're regulated by authorities that are not Chapter 18A competent authorities. In its listing decision, the exchange took into account all relevant facts and circumstances. Since the European Medicines Agency and China's National Medical Products Administration, which are both Chapter 18A competent authorities, had reviewed and taken into account the clinical trial design and data of the Australian trial, in granting their approval to start the global pivotal phase 2 and 3 clinical trials, and that they had accepted the Australian trial results and had no objection to further clinical trials based on the Australian trial's clinical results. The exchange considered that the Australian trial met the suitability requirement. The exchange emphasized that this decision was based on the specific facts and circumstances of the case and that the conclusion related to the particular product. It commented that the decision should not be construed to mean that a clinical trial conducted in Australia will generally be accepted as a trial regulated by a competent authority, nor that the Therapeutic Goods Administration is generally accepted as a competent authority under Chapter 18A. The second factor that a Chapter 18A listing applicant must demonstrate to be considered suitable for listing is that it must be primarily engaged in R&D for the development of its core products and must have been engaged in the R&D of its core products for at least 12 months before listing. Listing applicants can use their historical R&D expenses incurred in relation to the core product to show that they've met this requirement. In the case of a core product that is in-licensed or acquired from a third party, the applicant must be able to demonstrate independent progress in the R&D for the core product since it's in-licensing or acquisition. This can be demonstrated, for example, if the product progressed from one phase of clinical trials to the next, such as from the preclinical to the clinical stage, or received regulatory approval from the competent authority to market the core product. The third suitability factor is that the listing applicant must demonstrate the need to raise funds having regard to its historical R&D expenses and or any post-approval R&D or other activities required by the competent authority. The listing document must include a breakdown of the IPO proceeds allocated to each of the core products and other products with details of the applicant's future development plans and an expected timetable for each product. In respect of a core product that's a medical device, a portion of the listing proceeds may be allocated to its commercialization, which could include building new or expanding existing manufacturing facilities, setting up sales, marketing, and medical teams, and providing relevant education or training to healthcare professionals. The listing applicant will be required to justify its allocation of the IPO proceeds with reference to the expected demand for its core product and product candidates, and the utilization rate of its existing manufacturing facilities. In terms of further developing a core product, the exchange allows a portion of the listing proceeds to be allocated to its expansion and or launch in other regulated markets and conducting further clinical trials or clinical evaluation required by the competent authority and or the relevant authority of other regulated markets. Lastly, in the case of out-licensed or jointly developed core products, a portion of the listing proceeds may be allocated to further development of an out-licensed or a jointly developed core product if the applicant can show that it has effective control over the R&D manufacturing and commercialization process. In order for an applicant to establish that it is suitable for listing, it also needs to have registered patents, patent applications and or intellectual property in relation to its core products. For in and out licensed core products and jointly developed core products, the applicant must show that it owns and will own all intellectual property independently developed by the applicant. An applicant engaged in R&D of pharmaceuticals, small molecule drugs, products or biologic products must have a pipeline of those potential products. To be considered suitable for listing, a Chapter 18A applicant must also demonstrate that it has previously received meaningful third-party investment, which is more than just a token investment from at least one sophisticated investor at least 6 months before the proposed listing. That investment must also continue at the date of listing. The purpose of this requirement is to show a reasonable degree of market acceptance for the applicant's biotech product and R&D. In the case of a spin-off listing from a parent company, the exchange may not insist on compliance with this investment requirement, where the applicant can otherwise demonstrate a reasonable degree of acceptance for its R&D and biotech product. The exchange assesses whether an investor is a sophisticated investor on a case-by-case basis, taking into account factors such as the investor's net assets and assets under management, relevant investment experience and knowledge and expertise in the relevant field. According to the Guide for New Listing Applicants, sophisticated investors include a dedicated healthcare or biotech fund or funds with a division or department specifically investing in the biopharmaceutical sector. Major pharmaceutical or healthcare companies and their venture capital funds and investors, investment funds or financial institutions with AUM of at least 1 billion Hong Kong dollars. Whether a third-party investment is meaningful is evaluated on a case-by-case basis, taking into consideration the nature, amount, stake, and timing of the investment. The exchange provides indicative benchmarks of the investment amount that the exchange typically considers to be meaningful, which depends on the applicant's market cap, for an applicant with a market cap of 1.5 to 3 billion Hong Kong dollars, an investment amount of at least 5% of its issued share capital on listing would be considered meaningful. For an applicant with a market cap of 3 to 8 billion Hong Kong dollars, an investment amount of at least 3% of its issued share capital on listing will be regarded as meaningful, while an applicant with a market cap of above 8 billion Hong Kong dollars would need an investment amount of at least 1% of its issued share capital for it to be regarded as meaningful. Pre-revenue biotech companies should ascertain early on in the IPO application process as to whether they satisfy the suitability factors set out in Chapter 2.3 of the Guide to New Listing Applicants, which I've just gone through. Some of the suitability factors may provide significant obstacles to listing. Conventional issuers are not subject to these additional suitability criteria. Notably, conventional issuers are not subject to any requirement to have any prior third-party investment. In addition to the suitability requirement, Chapter 18A listing applicants must satisfy other eligibility requirements for listing. Expected market cap. Chapter 18A applicants must have a minimum expected market cap of 1.5 billion Hong Kong dollars at the time of listing under Listing Rule 18A032. In comparison, a conventional issuer is subject to a minimum expected market cap at listing of 500 million Hong Kong dollars under Listing Rule 8092. As set out in Listing Rule 18A033, biotech companies applying for listing under Chapter 18A must have a track record of operating in their current line of business for at least 2 financial years prior to listing under substantially the same management. In comparison, issuers under the conventional listing route are generally required to have a trading record of at least 3 financial years with management continuity for at least the 3 preceding financial years. Chapter 18A listing applicants must also meet enhanced working capital requirements under Listing Rule 18A034 to mitigate the risk that they may be unable to meet their operational expenses after listing. Applicants are required to have available sufficient working capital to cover at least 125% of the group's costs for at least 12 months from the listing document date, after taking into account the IPO proceeds. These costs should consist substantially of general administrative and operating costs, including production costs and R&D costs. The exchange expects a substantive portion of the IPO proceeds to be applied to these costs. Capital expenditures are not required to be included in the calculation of working capital requirements for the purpose of Listing Rule 18A034. However, where capital expenditures are financed out of borrowings, relevant interest and loan repayments must be included in the calculation. Biotech companies are required to include R&D costs, even if they are capitalized. In the calculation of working capital requirements for the purpose of Listing Rule 18A034, a conventional issuer is not subject to a requirement to have working capital available to cover at least 125% of the group's costs for at least 12 months from the listing document date, and that the costs should substantially consist of specified costs. However, under Listing Rule 8.21A, all listing applicants must include a working capital statement in their listing documents. In making this statement, the applicant must be satisfied after due and careful inquiry that it and its subsidiary undertakings have available sufficient working capital for the group's present requirements, that is, for at least the next 12 months from the listing document date. In assessing a biotech applicant's listing suitability under Chapter 18A, the exchange takes into consideration any change in the applicant's ownership in the 12 months before the listing application date. In comparison, issuers under the conventional listing route are required under Listing Rule 805 to have ownership continuity and control for the most recent audited financial year. Chapter 18A listing applicants must comply with the general public float requirement of Listing Rule 8081 that at least 25% of their issued shares are publicly held at all times, unless the exchange allows a lower public float. Listing Rule 18A07 additionally requires that Chapter 18A listing applicants ensure that a portion of their issued shares with a market cap of at least 375 million Hong Kong dollars are held by the public at the time of listing. Any shares allocated to a cornerstone investor and any shares subscribed by existing shareholders of the biotech company at the time of listing will not be regarded as publicly held for the purpose of Listing Rule 18A07. However, these investors do not need to be excluded when calculating whether the general public float requirement is met. This means that provided an applicant can meet the Listing Rule 18A07 requirement for a 375 million Hong Kong dollar public float, cornerstone investments and existing shareholder subscriptions can be included in determining the company's public float under Listing Rule 8081, provided that the cornerstone investors and existing shareholders are not call-connected persons of the applicant or otherwise are not recognized as members of the public under Listing Rule 824. Listing Rule 824 sets out the definition of the public that applies when calculating whether the general public float requirement is satisfied. Cornerstone investors are defined in Chapter 18A as investors in an applicant's IPO who are given a guaranteed allocation of shares irrespective of the final offer price. Generally speaking, cornerstone investors are usually larger institutions and prominent individuals, such as asset management funds, sovereign wealth funds, and Hong Kong tycoons, to whom a portion of the shares in the IPO placing tranche are preferentially placed in order to signal to the market that those investors have confidence in the listing applicant. The rules on the ability of an applicant's existing shareholders to invest in its IPO are different for Chapter 18A biotech companies than for other companies listing under the general listing rules. This is because pre-revenue biotech companies are expected to have significant ongoing funding needs to bring their core products to commercialization. The exchange recognizes this and the fact that the existing shareholders of biotech applicants may wish to continue to participate in the company's fundraisings to prevent their shareholdings being diluted. The existing shareholder conditions, which normally apply where an applicant's existing shareholders or their close associates participate as cornerstone investors or as placees in the applicant's IPO, do not apply to biotech companies listing under Chapter 18A. The Guide to New Listing Applicants provides that given the likely funding needs of biotech companies and the important role played by their existing shareholders in providing funding, existing shareholders are allowed to participate in a biotech company's IPO, provided that the company complies with the public float requirements of Listing Rules 8081 and 18A07, that is, the general public float requirement and the additional Chapter 18A specific float requirement, which I've just discussed. An existing shareholder holding less than 10% of the applicant's shares can subscribe for shares in its IPO as either a placee or a cornerstone investor. Where the existing shareholder subscribes as a placee, the applicant and its sponsor are required to confirm that no preference was given to the shareholder in making the allocation. Where the existing shareholder subscribes as a cornerstone investor, the applicant and its sponsor must confirm that the only preferential treatment given to the shareholder was that of an assured entitlement at the IPO price and that the terms of the existing shareholder's acquisition are substantially the same as those of the other cornerstone investors. An existing shareholder holding 10% or more of an applicant's shares is allowed to subscribe in the IPO as a cornerstone investor, but not as a placee. Chapter 2.3 of the Guide to New Listing Applicants also allows an existing shareholder with a contractual anti-dilution right to exercise such right and subscribe for shares in the IPO in accordance with the requirements of Chapter 4.15 of the Exchange's Guide to New Listing Applicants. Where IPO shares will be allocated to a biotech company's core connected persons, the applicant will need to apply for a waiver from Listing Rule 909, which prohibits the applicant's core connected persons from dealing in the shares for which listing is sought. Hong Kong IPOs typically consist of a placing tranche for institutional investors and a public subscription tranche for retail investors. Practice Note 18 of the Listing Rules sets out procedures in relation to the allocation of shares in IPOs, covering the allocation between the placing tranche and public subscription tranche. The exchange recognizes that pre-revenue biotech companies potentially carry additional risks for retail investors. It thus requires Chapter 18A listing applicants to present compelling reasons if they wish to apply for a modification to the Practice Note 18 minimum public subscription requirement. The exchange will consider requests for modifying the minimum public subscription requirement on an individual case basis. Turning now to listing document disclosure requirements for Chapter 18A listing applicants. The listing documents for Chapter 18A listing applicants are required by Listing Rule 18A06 to include an accountant's report covering two financial years instead of three financial years, which is a general requirement under Listing Rule 404. Companies applying for listing with an accountant's report covering two financial years need to apply for a certificate of exemption from the applicable disclosure requirements under the third schedule to the company's Winding Up and Miscellaneous Provisions Ordinance. Pre-revenue biotech companies must include in their listing documents the information that all listing applicants are required to include as specified in Appendix 1A to the listing rules, and must also disclose the additional information required by Listing Rule 18A04. Listing Rule 18A04 requires disclosure of the biotech company's strategic objectives and details of each of its core products, which should include a description of the core product and details of any relevant regulatory approval required and/or obtained. The listing applicant should also include in its listing document a summary of material communications with the relevant competent authority relating to its core products, unless disclosure is not allowed under the applicable laws and regulations or according to directions from the competent authority. Listing Rule 18A04 also requires disclosure of the stage of R&D reached for each core product and the requirements and likely time frame for each core product to reach commercialization. Listing documents must also include all material safety data, including any serious adverse events, and a description of the immediate market opportunity for each core product if it proceeds to commercialization, and any potential increased market opportunity in the future, including a general description of the competition in the potential market. Details of patents granted, registered, and applied for must be disclosed, or an appropriate negative statement, unless it can be shown that this would require the disclosure of highly sensitive commercial information. The company's material rights and obligations under applicable licensing agreements need to be disclosed for an in-licensed product. For a core product that is a biologic product, disclosure of plant capacity and production-related technology details is required. Where regulatory approval has been granted for a core product, the listing document must state that there have been no material unexpected or adverse changes since the date of the regulatory approval. Any material changes must be prominently disclosed. If the applicant owns any biotech products that have been approved for commercialization by a competent authority, the applicant must include a description of these approved products as well as the length of the unexpired patent protection period and details of current and expected market competitors. The listing document must also include information on the biotech company's R&D experience, including laboratory R&D, the expertise and experience of its key management and technical staff, and any collaborative development and research agreements. There must be disclosure of the directors and senior management's experience in the R&D, manufacturing, and commercialization of biotech products, as well as any measures that the applicant has in place to retain its key management or technical staff, the arrangements in case of their departure, and the salient terms of their service agreements. Applicants must also disclose any legal claims or proceedings that may influence their R&D for any core product. Disclosure of general and specific risks is also required, for example, the potential risks in clinical trials, risks associated with the approval process for core products, and the extent to which the business depends on key individuals and the impact of the departure of key management or technical staff on the applicant's business. Biotech companies' listing documents must contain an estimate of their cash operating costs, including the costs of R&D and clinical trials incurred in the development of their core products, as well as the costs of employing their workforce, direct production costs if production has commenced, R&D, any product marketing, any non-income taxes, royalties and other governmental charges, contingency allowances and any other significant costs. A biotech company is required to set out the components of cash operating costs separately by category. Explain the reason for any departure from the list of items to be included under cash operating costs and discuss any material cost items that should be highlighted to investors. Listing Rule 18A04 also lists a number of other matters which should be disclosed if they're relevant and material to the biotech company's business. These include project risks arising from environmental, social, and health and safety issues, as well as compliance with host country laws, regulations and permits, and payments made to host country governments in relation to tax, royalties, and other significant payments on a country-by-country basis. If relevant and material, a biotech company is also required to disclose its historical experience of dealing with host country laws and practices, including management of differences between national and local practice, and its historical experience of dealing with local governments and communities' concerns on the sites of its research and trials, and relevant management arrangements. In addition, if an applicant has obtained an expert technical assessment, that assessment should be included in the listing document if relevant. The exchange also requires listing documents to include a prominent warning statement that the company's core products may not ultimately be successfully developed and marketed. Chapter 2.3 of the Guide to New Listing Applicants provides guidance for Chapter 18A listing applicants, which supplements the exchange's general guidance on listing document disclosure applicable to all applicants. Paragraph 11 of Chapter 2.3 provides some general drafting guidance. In particular, in the light of the significant retail investor interest in biotech companies and the risks associated with investing in them, such as whether the core product can be successfully commercialized, the exchange emphasizes the importance of fair, balanced, and accurate disclosure, including clear and precise disclosure of their business models and products and upfront disclosure of significant risk factors, and encourages the use of diagrams or flowcharts. It also requires listing applicants to avoid compromising scientific accuracy when disclosing its business model and products, and to instead provide clear and precise disclosure, not using marketing or emotional language. Also, a biotech company should disclose the details of any major adverse events, their actual and potential impact, and the company's measures to mitigate them. When evaluating the applicant's product and candidates, directors should refrain from over-relying on the opinion of industry experts and instead provide their own assessment of the scientific and technical aspects. The exchange then sets out a series of disclosure recommendations. These commence with the summary section of the listing document. The exchange's recommendations include disclosing a summary of the business model, key risks, core products, and key non-core products, and their competitive landscape, as well as disclosing a development timetable and any expected material increase in costs or expenses over the period covered by the working capital forecast. In the summary section, a biotech company should include specific risks that may affect the core product, its plans to commercialize its products, operation, and industry in the order of significance. Risks may include market competition, major adverse events which may impact the applicant, difficulties in recruiting suitable patients for clinical trials for rare disease indications, infringement and expiry of IP rights, product liabilities and failure to successfully develop or to obtain regulatory approval for pipeline products. As for the industry overview section of the listing document, this should include the drivers and barriers to entry in the industry and markets relevant to the applicant, information about the applicant's target market size, the growth rate of the targeted market, and the key underlying quantitative and qualitative assumptions used to derive the estimated addressable market size, which should be reviewed by the sponsors. The exchange also reminds applicants and sponsors to ensure the accuracy of industry data and statistics, and states that there should be clear disclosure of data sources relied on by industry consultants. For example, if official data on certain target markets is unavailable, summaries of the bases and assumptions used by the industry consultants in deriving the industry data should be disclosed. The exchange also reminds sponsors that they are required to check the reasonableness of these assumptions and bases. In addition, the exchange expects the addressable markets of the applicant's core products and key non-core products to be clearly defined, and disclosure of material information on these markets. The competitive landscape of the product's therapeutic areas is expected to be disclosed, including, where applicable, information on competing products, such as their name, line of treatment, price, reimbursement coverage, expiration date of key IP rights, technologies, and addressable markets. Applicants are expected to clearly disclose their business model, which may be either a combination of an in-licensing model and or a self-developed model. The exchange expects applicants to disclose key aspects of their models, including a fair and balanced disclosure of the level of R&D undertaken and to be undertaken, which should correspond to the business model and the market potential, including information such as existing collective experience and experience of the applicant's key management and technical staff, whether the key R&D staff remain employed during the track record period or if there were any departures, the impact on the applicant. In addition, any in-licensing arrangements or out-licensing arrangements, including their material terms, should be disclosed in accordance with the guide for new listing applicants. The exchange provides detailed guidance on the information required in relation to a listing applicant's core products and key non-core products, including in respect of the product's origins and jurisdiction rights, their market opportunities, relevant studies, the applicant's R&D and commercialization strategies, the experience of and the applicant's collaboration with participating research institutions, any recorded sales, any significant non-core products, any products classified and regulated as orphan medicines or innovative therapies, and any commercialized core products. The applicant should consider excluding disclosures related to products which are at the very early preclinical stage, where the applicant does not have meaningful preclinical research data or the data is deemed scientifically sensitive. Applicants are expected to disclose specified details of their material IP rights in relation to their products, including the tenure and material payment obligations associated with those rights. Whether the IP rights are in-licensed or self-owned, the product parts protected by material IP rights, the extent and form to which such IP is protected, and any risk of IP infringements. The listing document should also include a directive statement supported by the sponsor's due diligence as to whether the applicant has infringed any third-party IP rights. Regarding the financial disclosures, the applicant must provide meaningful breakdowns of their revenue-generating items or services during the track record period. In particular, the applicant should disclose the cash burn rate, which is the period of time the applicant can maintain its operations with its existing cash balance and IPO proceeds, with proper and reasonable assumptions. Given that R&D expenditure typically accounts for a significant portion of the expenses of biotech companies, meaningful breakdowns and commentaries on any fluctuations in these costs have to be disclosed. Separately, the exchange has said in its FAQs that where a principal investigator who is in charge of or supervises a biotech company's clinical trial has additional roles in the biotech company, for example, as a member of a scientific advisory panel, and receives compensation for such a role, the exchange expects listing document disclosure of the investigator's specific functions in the biotech company and the terms of compensation, as well as whether such compensation may impair the clinical trial's integrity. The exchange also sets out certain funding and financial disclosure expectations. In particular, there should be disclosure of the valuation of each round of pre-IPO investment and reasons for any material fluctuations in valuation as compared with the previous round of pre-IPO financing, and any material fluctuations between the proposed IPO valuation and the latest round of pre-IPO financing. Material information on sophisticated investors should be disclosed, such as their background and track record in the relevant biotech industry. Listing documents should also give a reasonable period of time with reasons during which the applicant could remain viable with its existing cash balance and the IPO proceeds, and disclose when the applicant anticipates conducting its next round of financing based on its burn rate. The assumptions relied on when calculating the burn rate should be reasonable. Biotech companies listed under Chapter 18A are subject to additional and modified continuing obligations as compared with issuers listing under the standard route. Biotech companies are subject to enhanced disclosure in their financial reports required by 18A08 to provide details of their R&D activities for the relevant period in their annual and half-yearly reports. This should include a summary of expenditure on R&D activities, in addition to details of the key stages and an indication of the likely timeframe for each core product under development to reach commercialization. Financial reports must also include a prominently disclosed warning that a core product may not ultimately be successfully developed and marketed. Certain transactions entered into by a listed company may be categorized as notifiable transactions under Chapter 14 of the listing rules. Notifiable transactions are relatively large transactions and are classified based on the size of the transaction compared to the size of the issuer. The requirements for a notifiable transaction depend on which of the classifications of notifiable transactions set out in Listing Rule 1406 the transaction falls into, such as disclosable transaction or major transaction. Classification is made on the basis of the 5% ratio set out in Listing Rule 1407, such as assets or revenue or profits. Listing Rule 1420 provides that if any percentage ratio produces an anomalous result or is inappropriate to the company's sphere of activity, the exchange may disregard the calculation and or substitute other relevant size indicators or industry-specific tests. The Guide for New Listing Applicants notes that since biotech companies listed under Chapter 18A are not required to meet the financial eligibility tests of Listing Rule 805 at the time of listing, it may not be appropriate to apply the revenue and profit ratios to their proposed transactions. In particular, the exchange may exercise its discretion under Listing Rule 1420 to disregard these two ratios for Chapter 18A listed companies and consider other appropriate indicators of size, such as industry-specific tests suggested by the issuer. Listing Rule 18A11 requires Chapter 18A issuers to be identified through the stock marker B at the end of their stock name. This enables investors to differentiate biotech companies that didn't meet the financial eligibility tests on listing. Biotech companies listed under 18A are subject to additional and modified requirements relating to changes to the company or its business. Under Listing Rule 18A10, listed biotech companies require the exchange's consent for any acquisition, disposal, or other transaction or arrangement, or a series of such transactions or arrangements that would result in a fundamental change to the company's principal activities as described in its listing document. This restriction was imposed due to concerns that pre-revenue biotech companies may become shell companies if they don't achieve their business objectives, and thus potential targets for backdoor listings, that is, attempts to list new assets or businesses in circumvention of the requirements for new listing applicants. The exchange said in its consultation paper when it introduced Chapter 18A that Listing Rule 18A10 is not aimed at restricting legitimate business development and that it will normally give its consent if it's satisfied that the issuer in question is engaging in legitimate business expansion or diversification as part of its business strategy. Chapter 18A companies are subject to the same delisting rules as other listed issuers, except where the exchange considers that such an issuer has failed to comply with its continuing obligations under Listing Rule 1324 to maintain sufficient operations and assets to warrant its continued listing. In these circumstances, the exchange may either suspend dealings or cancel the listing of the issuer's shares under Listing Rule 601. Alternatively, under Listing Rule 18A09, it may give the issuer a period of up to 12 months, rather than the 18 months generally given to other listed issuers, to re-comply with Listing Rule 1324. If the issuer fails to re-comply within 12 months, its listing will be cancelled. Once a biotech company listed under Chapter 18A is able to satisfy one of the three financial eligibility tests under Listing Rule 805, the requirements of Listing Rules 18A09 to 18A11 relating to sufficiency of operations, prior exchange consent for transactions resulting in a fundamental change in the company's business, and stock marker B cease to apply. So that brings me to the end of the formal part of this webinar. Thank you. It was great to see you, and hope to see you again soon. Bye.